And welcome to the Wednesday edition of Q&A as the week flies by once again. Oh, do we have a show for you today? We're going to talk first of all with our friend Katie Norris. She'll be coming in from Prescott Area Shelter Services that does so much great work for so many good people in this area, helping women and children through some very difficult times in life and putting them back on their feet. Katie has some great news about a shelter expansion coming up and more housing opportunities and how you can actually save on your tax bill by helping that cause. And then after the interview with Katie, I'll be talking to Roger Naylor. If you're one of those people who enjoys opening up your Saturday or Sunday Arizona Republic and seeing great places to see all around Arizona, Roger is the man behind those great stories and several books, including a brand new one called Arizona State Parks, a guide to amazing places in the Grand Canyon State. So Roger will be joining us for a big portion of today's Q&A program. Hey, the television industry will never be the same after yesterday. Disney has invested, are you ready for this? They have invested $3 billion. They are shaking up the TV industry with their new streaming network, Disney Plus. Yesterday, for its launch, even with technical breakdowns from overloading the system with consumer requests for it, they still signed up 10 million subscribers. Now, that's forcing Netflix, Amazon, HBO, and other competitors to lowball their subscribers at cheaper rates just to keep them from defecting to Disney, which, by the way, will not show any R-rated material on their Disney Plus streaming. They will save that for their Hulu and Freeform programming divisions, as well as they've also got the Star Wars series. They've got High School Musical franchise. They have The World According to Jeff Goldblum. That's a docuseries from National Geographic. The Disney Animation, Pixar, Marvel, and Star Wars titles. 7,500 TV episodes, including the entire Simpsons library. That's on Disney Plus. So keep that in mind. Hey, you want some live entertainment that's absolutely top-notch? They had the press preview last night for Phantom of the Opera, which opens tomorrow evening at the Yavapai College Performing Arts Center. You better get your tickets now by calling 776-2000 or going online to ycpac.com. The press preview performance last night, nothing short of eye-popping and spectacular. Also, One Stage Family Theater will present Narnia twice this Saturday at the Prescott Elks Theater with performances at 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. Get your tickets at the Elks box office or call 777-1370. And finally, this is the second of three weekends for Thursday through Sunday performances of Annapurna, the wonderful Stage 2 marital drama directed by Kathy Hahn at the PCA's little black box theater in the alley behind Peregrine Books. You can call 445-3286 or log on to pca-az.net. And if you're a fan of old-fashioned 1860s vintage baseball, the Prescott Champions Vintage Ball Club is playing in Prescott for the last time until March. That'll be this Saturday. It's a round-robin event with the Prescott All-Stars playing at 10 a.m., or the Prescott Champions playing at 10 a.m. against the Fort Verde Excelsiors and at noon against the Bisbee Bees. Then at 2 o'clock, the Bees and Excelsiors will play, and those are all events totally free. You can watch as little or as much as of 19th century baseball as you'd like. And if you go, say hello to our friend Mike Ace Adrian when you get there. Well, we've got Katie Norris and Roger Naylor for today's show. It's going to be a good one on Q&A on the Talk of the Quad Cities, 1130 AM, 99.9 FM, 95.5 FM in Prescott Valley in Cottonwood. And we stream live around the world at KQNA.com. Don't go away. Live at 209. Always great to have a friend in the studio. That's certainly the case with Katie Norris. Katie, what exactly is your title at Prescott Area Shelter Services?
I am the Director of Programs at PASS.
And our friend Carmen, of course, is listening too. Hello, Carmen. Great to have you on the show because you have some great things to talk about. First of all, for those in the past who have heard about the wonderful work that PASS does in the community, I think they'd be surprised to learn how far their money goes when they donate. For one thing, for as little as $28, you can give shelter and all of their support programs, including case management, to one guest for a night. For only $50, that supplies the shelter with toilet paper for at least 2 months. For only $100, sponsors 10 days of shelter for one person, and that one day out of those 10 can change the life of someone. $400 will supply shelter to a full dorm of guests for a week, along with staff support, the resources and supplies needed, and a warm and safe environment. If you can afford $500, that'll support a family for 1 month through their transitional housing program. And God bless those who can afford $1,000 for PASS. It helps one family or two single women obtain permanent housing. Boy, you talk about money well spent.
Yes, yeah, anything helps us so much.
Oh, it, and not only, you know, cash donations, which of course are the lifeblood of any nonprofit, but you also accept and can really use donations in kind of everyday products, can't you?
Oh, definitely. Anything you use at home, we can use. Toilet paper, paper towels, cleaning supplies, we're really low on conditioner, shampoo. Mm-hmm. That helps us so much to have those donations.
And a little bird told me you have some big news coming up, something about an expansion perhaps?
Yes, yes. Over the past year or so, we've collected a lot of money, donations, grants, to expand our shelter. Mm-hmm. We're going to build 2 extra rooms and a full bathroom on top of our community room. And this is going to be to serve moms with sons over 12 years old. Mm-hmm. So currently in Prescott Valley, Yavapai County really, there's not a shelter that is capable of serving the moms with sons over 12. No family shelter in the area, and so we just wanted to fill that. Mm-hmm. So thanks to so many wonderful people, that's going to be possible. Hopefully before the holidays happen, the construction will be done because it's mm-hmm. already started.
And speaking of the holiday season and the end of the year, there are ways that our taxpayers can have their money well spent and save on their tax bill, right?
Yes, yes, definitely. We're a qualifying charitable organization, a 501c3, so you can get $400 for individual or $800 for a married couple. Mm-hmm. There's our website, prescottshelters.org, or you can call us at 778-5933 and we'll talk you through it, or you can mail a check. It's in the newspaper. We already have ads out. We'll do a winter mailing, but we appreciate any donation we can get.
I was doing a promo yesterday for an old-fashioned radio-style play coming on November 20th to First Congregational Church. Mm-hmm. They're going to do a staging of It's a Wonderful Life, and Pastor Jay Wilcher at First Congregational Church is active not only with the Coalition for Compassion and Justice, but the church also provides PASS members a free meal, I believe, once a month, a hot meal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Our meal providers are amazing. They take on the task of preparing a meal at home for, right now we have over 24 people, I think, mm-hmm. and bringing it in already made. That's quite a task to take on, but it's so appreciated to have the meals at night.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the steps you have to go through to start this this expansion of your shelter?
Well, we were thinking about it over the years. We've always had this need, and other nonprofits in the community work really hard to try to meet it too. But we have a lot of moms who call who have a son who's like 14, 15. And so we just decided that we should really get them their own space. Sometimes we would try to make it work in our community room, but they need a bed and a mm-hmm. room and everything. So we just started writing grants, and we got a lot of support for this. It was really wonderful. Mm-hmm. So once we had enough grant money, we were able to start the process.
So when families, women and their children first find out about you, who generally steers them in your direction?
I think a lot of different nonprofits know about us, the schools and all sorts of different people. And then they also find us online. So they just call first. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we're full. We're always full with a wait list. But we will do the intake screening, and then put them on our wait list, and it's first come, first serve. Mm-hmm. But, in the winter time, when it does get below 30 degrees, Freeze. There is the Operation Deep Freeze that happens through Salvation Army. So mm-hmm. they go there first, and then they can come to us, and we have cots and everything.
Now, your shelter is over a couple of blocks away from Yavapai College, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And give me an idea of what happens the first time someone calls you, or when they come in and discuss their situation. What kinds of questions are you going to ask them? What kinds of concerns do they have?
The questions we ask them really is what made them homeless in this situation, a little bit about their history, what their goals are, what we can do to support them, things like that. Mm-hmm. We just explain how we run, that we're mostly a nighttime shelter. We close during the day, the volunteer support. We show them the dorm, which usually always makes them feel better mm-hmm. once they see where it's going to be. And then after the first night and they meet the guests who are all so willing to help them
yeah.
and the volunteers, they usually start to feel better after a day or two, mm-hmm. which is nice.
Do you still need volunteers?
Yes, we can always use volunteers for the meal providers, like I mentioned, or evening advocates from 5 to 8 are really wonderful. Mm-hmm. They come in, they greet the guests, have dinner with them, support them, maybe do resume help if they can, or help them apply for jobs, or just listen because they had a hard day. We have overnight advocates who sleep at the shelter, and then office volunteers in the morning to help us. We're very small staff, so yeah. the volunteers help us so much.
And your mission is to keep people occupied and employed, if at all possible, during the day, so that this is a temporary way station, correct?
Definitely, yeah. We're a 3-month shelter, and we mm-hmm. actually have a pretty high success rate. It varies all the time. You know, 84 to 88% of the women we serve do move on to a permanent housing situation. So we sit with them. They have mandatory case management meetings every week with our case manager, who's there to support them. They tell her, you know, what they think success is, and then we help guide them and to reach those goals.
With the case management counselors, what kinds of services do they provide, and what kinds of issues do the homeless parents have?
The case managers, we have a couple. We have one at the shelter, and then we have our two transitional houses out in Chino Valley that we opened up this year, and we have them out there too. So it changes for everybody, whether it start to with mental and physical health first so that maybe they can get a job and then start to save and create budgets with them and all that education. We have somebody from Wells Fargo who comes to teach financial classes. We have all sorts of different educational things we now offer in the evenings at the shelter, like 12-step programs for support, things like that. It's our education to employability program that we started, actually. So the education and that support has really made a difference in the evenings for the shelter.
So by the time they graduate, so to speak, mm-hmm. and are back on their feet, they're better prepared for what comes their way, aren't they?
Definitely, yeah. We try to help support them to get them in a better place than when they started with us.
Mm-hmm. Would you describe the camaraderie at the shelter among the people who are temporarily staying there?
It's actually pretty good. It is, you know, 19 to 22 women sharing a room, sharing mm-hmm. bathrooms. So, of course, there's challenges. For the most part, everybody does really well, and they're mm-hmm. respectful. And somebody new comes, and they show them around and talk with them and make sure that they feel comfortable and things like that. It's actually really pleasant.
And I would imagine, too, for someone going through this for the very first time, having people who have survived this, it helps to have their input and know that that you may survive it too, right?
Yes. Yeah, to hear somebody else say, you know, tonight's hard, but it'll get better.
Mm-hmm.
They're here to help you. There's lots of resources. There are so many other wonderful nonprofits that offer resources that we can refer people to. So that's mm-hmm. great.
And in addition to the Arizona tax credit we can take at the end of the year, how can people help with a donation if they can't show up at the shelter, but they want to help with maybe a check?
Yeah. So you can show up at the shelter Monday through Friday, 9 to noon, or hours that we guarantee to be there to take donations. Our address is 336 North Rush Street. It's near Yavapai College. So you mm-hmm. can mail a check. You can go online to PrescottShelters.org and read all about us and find our emails or different ways to contact us.
And you've been involved with Prescott Area Shelter Services for how long now?
7 years.
Wow, has the time flown?
I know.
Just think of all the people you've helped. Do any of them come back and offer their services as a volunteer to pay
yes.
it forward?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do have, actually most of the guests say they want to come back and help. We do have to have a little break in between, but a lot of them contact us and they want to come back again and offer their services.
Well, it's because of you. It's going to be a lot more bearable holidays for people going through difficult times. Mm-hmm. And we thank you and Carmen and all of your volunteers
yes.
for all the good you're doing. Let us know next time you have something exciting going at the shelter. We'll have you back on the show.
Wonderful. Thank you.
You bet. Stay tuned because we've got Ride Your Nailer coming on in just a moment to talk about the great places to see around Arizona, especially the state parks. He's got a new book all about that. Coming up on today's Q&A on the Talk of the Quad Cities, 1130 AM, 99.9 FM, 95.5 FM in Prescott Valley and Cottonwood, and we stream live around the world at KQNA.com. We are back live at 2:23. One of the guests I've been trying to get on the show for a long time because he is worth it. Anybody who reads the Arizona Republic on Saturdays and Sundays looking for great travel stories around Arizona knows the name Roger Naylor. He is in the studio right now. He has a brand new book out. It's called Arizona State Parks, A Guide to Amazing Places in the Grand Canyon State. You know, Roger, when I was doing the promo for your appearance today, I was trying to think of the best way to describe you. And I describe you as, quote, author, traveler, bon vivant, raconteur, and fine diner. And the reason I added that last part was when I used to host AZTV's Morning Scramble and Sandy Moss's show when she was on vacation. You were a frequent guest on there, and it always seemed whenever you were on there, there was also a chef from a restaurant that you have discovered across Arizona, and that must be one of the favorite parts of what you do.
It is. It's great. You know, I travel around writing travel stories about the state, and a big part of travel is food. You know, that's how we remember things, you know, from some of our trips and so forth. So I always would do a lot of dining stories. I've done dining series, year-long dining series for the Arizona Republic. And, so I would it started out my first appearance with Sandy was when my book Boots and Burgers came out. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of my favorite day of all. You hike a trail, you spend a few hours, you walk off some calories, and then you stop at a little diner and you
and
pack
them
on again.
On, yeah.
The little burger. I love that. So she wanted to talk about the book, so I said, suggested let me bring one of the chefs who makes a great burger there. And sure enough, we had Michelle Jurison from the Haunted Hamburger in Jerome, a great mm-hmm. little place, and she came on. We did our little segment. I talked, and then we got to eat a burger in the studio. So that became a regular thing. Whenever I was coming on to talk about travel, I would bring along one of a chef from one of the restaurants that I really admired and, mm-hmm. and thought people should know about, and they'd cook up a little something with Sandy in the kitchen. And so I got to talk about what I wanted to talk about, and more importantly, I got fed at the end of the show. So.
And you also alerted viewers on Sandy's show to some out-of-the-way places they otherwise would never have heard about.
Yeah, I think that's part of the fun of, you know, you discover these places, mm-hmm. you know. I don't know if that's changing these days with, you know, now everybody is on Yelp and TripAdvisor and searching and trying to, you know, kind of figure it out. Mm-hmm. I like that joy of discovery. I like hitting a town, not knowing anything about it and kind of looking around going, now that looks like my kind of place.
That looks interesting. Let's drop in. Right
there and stuff. And so that's sort of how I still try to operate. I like mm-hmm. that feeling. I like that sense of discovery that mm-hmm. you feel like, oh man, I got to tell people about this. And,
sure.
And, you know, once you're eating, so.
Now, are you an Arizona native?
I am not, but I have been out here for about 40 some years. Mm-hmm. I came out as a college student. I was in love with the West. I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio, and knew I wanted to go West because
so you
I was
like
in
chili,
love.
Right?
Well, yeah, exactly. Cincinnati chili. Just from the, what I saw in cowboy movies, that landscape, that drama, I wanted to see that. So when it was time to apply for college, I ended up at Northern Arizona University in Flagstaff. Mm-hmm. Fell in love with Arizona right away. which may not have been the best thing that was not so good for my college career. I was dean's list the first semester, and by the second semester I was on academic probation. Because by then I'd learned I could walk out of my dorm in the morning and go to class, or I could hitchhike up to the peaks or out to the Grand Canyon or down to Sedona. So by then I was just rambling around Arizona, and I did that for most of the next 4 years. I dropped out of college after a year and spent the time rambling around, traveling, working when I needed to, basically being a bum, as my parents like to say. Although now, what I like to remind them of is I do exactly the same thing, except somebody pays me for it.
So. And that's where they get real envious.
So then they go, okay, all right.
You know, Roger, my regular listeners know that I spent 10 years in Southern California. Does the name Huell Hauser mean anything to you?
Yeah, I've heard the name.
Huell was an icon in California because he had a syndicated TV series called California Gold, where he would find all these out-of-the-way places that are not, like you said, you know, they're not on TripAdvisor, they're not in the Chamber of Commerce publications, but people would discover it and just fall in love with it, and he just enthused so much about this. It reminds me a lot of when I read, you know, a lot of your work, and in fact, some of your more recent work includes a beautiful presentation for the Grand Canyon. It's called 100 Years, 1 Million Lives, One Grand Canyon. How did you get involved in writing this?
Well, actually, I was approached by the Grand Canyon National Park back in 2018 because they were about to turn 100. They turned 100, the National Park, not the canyon, obviously.
The
National Park, turned 100
in 2019.
Yeah, a little bit.
Just a little.
And they asked if I would be interested in writing their official commemorative magazine. I was very honored and said absolutely, and I spent a few months working on it, working with a designer and with a park representative and putting it together, and it came out beautifully. It's a really gorgeous 56-page glossy magazine, and I'm very proud of it. It's the only place you can get it. They they have about a million copies printed up, I think, but you can get it at the Grand Canyon itself. That's it.
Yep.
They hand it out there. It's available. Or if you happen to be at one of my talks, when you buy a book of mine, I give it to you for a gift. Or if you order one of my books on my website, I send it out that. And that's while supplies last. You know, I've got a few boxes. Once they're gone, then that's it. But at least for right now. Because I want people, I wanted to get it in people's hands. I wanted to them to see it. It's work I'm proud of. And anything to encourage people to visit the Grand Canyon over and over and maybe discover some new aspects of it that they haven't seen before.
Sure. Speaking of your books and your talks, tell us what's going on Saturday.
I'm going to be at Peregrine Book Company in Prescott this Saturday, November 16th. I'll be there at 2 p.m. giving a presentation about my book, Arizona State Parks. I'm very excited about it. I've been doing a few of these now, and they're always fun. I have a PowerPoint presentation of the parks and talk to, and then do questions and answers. And everybody who attends will actually receive a free state park day pass.
Nice.
Yeah,
wow.
A little pass to get in. And, of course, then you can buy any of my books and have the chance to end up with a copy of the Grand Canyon magazine as well. So it's a pretty action-packed little day.
Now, this is about a 140-page book about Arizona state parks and other amazing places in Arizona. Tell me how you got started doing this.
Well, I've been in love with the state parks for ages. I live in Cottonwood, and Dead Horse Ranch State Park is my neighborhood park. It's my backyard, essentially. It belongs to me. Although I've worked out an arrangement with the state parks people, I generously allow other people to visit it. But it belongs to me. I'm there 5 days a week. For 25 years, I've been hiking in that park day after day after day after day. And I know how important it is to me. I know how important it is to the community. So I've always been fascinated by the state parks. But then for all these years that I've been writing for the Arizona Republic, one of the things I've noticed is that no matter what type of story would come up, if I was writing about great campgrounds or great wildflower displays or kid-friendly hikes or dog-friendly adventures or, you know, whatever, any kind of thing, there would always be a state park there that I'd go, man, this is a perfect fit for this story. Mm-hmm. And I started thinking about the state parks, and, you know, I always visit them when I'm traveling, and it occurred to me that, you know, every chapter of Arizona history is written in the state parks. It's included in the state parks. Every type of scenery you'll find in Arizona, you find in the state parks.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I wanted people to see the parks as uniquely individual. So every park has its own chapter with a lot of information about the park, history of the park, things to do and see while you're there, plus nearby attractions, popular events, all that. But I wanted them to think of them as the whole, too. Yeah. I wanted to see that as a group, how important they are, because these are our parks. They belong to us. You know, I mean, people travel from all over the world to visit the Grand Canyon, Monument Valley, all our high-value destination places, but not so many come for Roper Lake and Reared Mansion and Tonto Natural Bridge. That's our turf. You know, when you go to the state parks, they're less crowded, less expensive, and the money you do spend will stay in that community, will support that local community. So it's just these are bite-sized, family-friendly little adventures, and I want to get people out seeing them.
And, you know, one of the odd things and probably fun things about writing about Arizona is our many quirks. For one thing, now you live in Cottonwood, correct?
Yes.
And there are three Cottonwoods in Arizona, which is kind of peculiar. Also, you mentioned the Dead Horse Ranch State Park, right? And then you have Bloody Basin Road, Big Bug Cafe, places like this. That has got to just be delightful to stumble upon these places and explain to a newcomer why they named it that.
Well, and there's always a reason. I actually did a story, I think, last year or so about weirdly named places in Arizona. And that's been done by many people and stuff because, you just sort of pick and choose. There's all these great town names, all these great little locations. The ranch, this Dead Horse Ranch is, you know, again, one of my favorite little stories. It's just back in the 40s, the family was looking for some ranch property, traveling around. They saw one place where there was a carcass of a horse out there. And when the parents were talking about it, what ranch did you like, kids? The kids all go, well, the one with a dead horse. That became the name of the ranch. And when they sold it to the state park, part of the arrangement, they had to maintain the name. They had to keep the name. And so on the one hand, for people just showing up, maybe it doesn't tell you much, but it kind of does. It's, you know, again, it's this family history here, this big family that was a part of Cottonwood, a part of this community. And all this land has been set aside includes the Verde River and 20 miles of hiking trails into the limestone hills and beautiful lagoons. And, you know, it's just a gorgeous little spot that I think is a little hidden gem, as so many of our parks are.
I wonder how many postal employees across the nation stop and stare at a letter addressed to a Chino Valley address at East Road 1 North. Huh? Which one is it? And it's all in one. Some of these street names.
Oh, sure.
Just throw me.
Sedona, if you go to Sedona, there's great names because of all the movies, all the old westerns shot there. So there's, you know, the Johnny Guitar Lane and then the Pony Soldier Road, you know, just all these different, that takes you back to westerns from the 50s and 40s and 60s and stuff. So,
do you think Hollywood will ever wise up and start making westerns again and realize they have a western lot right here?
I always hope they will. Westerns are my number one movie. Again, it's why I moved to Arizona in the first place.
When you were a kid, they were on
fascinated.
Every network,
exactly.
Every night of the week. Yeah. They were playing in every movie theater and drive-in. And what happened?
And I think the time is right to bring those back.
That would be great.
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
I'll be the first one in line to buy the tickets.
Oh, man. We have all the open spaces. We have the mountain backdrops. We have Whiskey Row downtown here. I mean, it's like a living Western movie set.
Absolutely. Well, you know, and so many of them were filmed here. You know, it's so great now to watch them. And no matter where they're supposed to be set at, you go, oh, well, there's Monument Valley, or there's Sedona, or there's Old Tucson, or, you know, there's and stuff. One of my favorite pieces of trivia, the movie Oklahoma. Not a traditional Western, but a musical. But the movie Oklahoma was filmed in Arizona, not far from Patagonia Lake State Park, down in the southern part of the state, because they couldn't find enough open space in Oklahoma. Man, that would have to grate on your nerves. I mean, I would hate to imagine them shooting a movie called Arizona and they'd film it in Delaware or something with a big culvert of styrofoam boulders passing off as the Grand Canyon stuff. So, but even if you wanted to come back, if they wanted to shoot a sequel to Oklahoma, you could come and do it in the same spot because it's still just this gorgeous open grassy plains.
Plus, you might find a Surrey with the fringe on top. Who knows?
And that's located at Jerome Historic State Park. What a beautiful segue.
It was actually used
in the movie. And there it is in the carport at Jerome State Historic Park up the Douglas Mansion. The actual Surrey with the fringe on top.
How about that? Mm-hmm. I'm expecting to see Gordon McRae and Shirley Jones next time I go there. We're just getting started with Roger Naylor. More coming up. We're going to take a break for news and weather and then more with Roger Naylor about traveling around Arizona on today's Q&A on the Talk of the Quad Cities. 11:30 a.m. 99.9 FM, 95.5 FM in Prescott Valley and Cottonwood, KQNA.com. We are back live at 2:45 with one of our favorite all-time guests, Mr. Roger Naylor, the acclaimed Arizona travel writer. And I have a question for you, Roger. What do Elvis, Pancho Villa, Lake Havasu Sunsets, and the Haunted Hamburger all have in common?
I write about them all, baby. I write about them all. You're referring to a newsletter I just sent out, just announcing my second publication of an ebook. One of the things I started doing, because I was a humor writer for many years, long before I became an Arizona travel writer. And I've just started kind of wanting to get back into that storytelling kind of goofy, fun stuff. And so I started writing these little Arizona-based short stories. My first one is Last Call with the Ghost of Pancho Villa. It's about two unlikely drinking buddies hanging out in the Gadsden Hotel in Douglas, where the ghost of Pancho Villa is said to haunt. And next one just came out. I just published it over the weekend. It's Elvis is standing on a corner in Winslow, Arizona, about a gang of Elvis impersonators living in Winslow.
And there's such a fine sight to see.
Exactly. So it's they're sort of, it's all based in Arizona. It all kind of ties in with Arizona legends, Arizona history, Arizona locations. And so I still get to share that love, my love of Arizona, but then just have some fun with some goofy stories and kind of going off in different tangents and exploring different things. And, you know, that's as a writer, that's what you like. It's nice to create stuff just out of my head as opposed to just, you know, when I've got an assignment and you want, I'm doing this story, so I know I'm writing about these places or I'm working on this book, so here's what's included. But when you sit down to start to write a story, it's just a blank page staring back at you, and it all has to come out of your head from somewhere. So I like that.
And, you know, in the summer, in the fall, in fact, back of 84, I came back from a career and romantic disaster of epic proportions, and I happened to pick up the Dan Fogelberg album, The Innocent Age. And for the first time in all those years I had been listening to music, I realized that these writers are writing lyrics based upon what they personally experienced. Because for the first time it dawned on me, my gosh, he's writing my story. How important is it for a writer to take what you have observed and learned and make it relevant to the reader?
Well, that's key. It has to be relatable, even if it's a situation they've not necessarily been in or experienced. They have to feel like that's how they would react, or that's, mm-hmm. yes, they can see that happening to them. And if it is something that where they've gone through, then wow, you know, then that's very powerful stuff. But yeah, so you have to be able to define what you do. You have to be able to create the language that is common for everyone. And, mm-hmm. You know, that's one of the things. I think, you know, I'm completely self-taught since I did drop out of college after a year. So I've had to kind of come up with my own voice. I've had to create my own voice, which for a long time kind of worked against me because it's back in, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago, that was not what people wanted.
Yeah.
But we're sort of in that day now where that casual voice that I have, that sort of talking, you know, I write like I talk kind of voice that pulls you into something is very much in vogue. Just because of social media and because of, you know, the blogs and people relate more to that. So all of a sudden now I'm kind of hip and there, but I've just been writing the same way for a long time.
You know, anybody who moves to Arizona, I mean, I saw a story in the Republic last week. I believe 60% of Arizona residents came here from someplace else. Anybody who moves to Arizona and wants to learn the zeitgeist and the sense of the area needs to start reading your books. And tell us what's going to be available for sale at your Peregrine Talk.
Well, all my books should be, or if not, they're available on my website at rogernaylor.com. But Arizona State Parks, A Guide to Amazing Places in the Grand Canyon State is my latest. The Amazing Cold Brothers of Grand Canyon, Boots and Burgers, An Arizona Handbook for Hungry Hikers, Arizona Kicks on Route 66, all those books, and as well as Death Valley, The Hottest Place on Earth, are available in paperbacks, but they're actual physical books. Mm-hmm. My short stories are just available as ebooks on Amazon, but you can get to them right from my website for like $1.99.
How do you beat that?
I know. This is great.
Now, when you have finalized your manuscript, it's ready to go and get published. How many times after you've let it go do you go, "Oh, I forgot to end this. I want it back."
Never, not too much.
Really?
Yeah. I always have so many deadlines in front of me. That's one of the keys that, you know, once it's gone, it's gone. And I got to move on to the next one. Now, when I get it, once the book, you know, when you're writing a book is sort of a process because you turn in the manuscript, they do a little, the editor will make some changes or so, and then you usually get to look at the galleys and see if you need to patch anything up or make any changes. So you usually get to take another swipe at it. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of times once a story is published or once I go, I could have done better with this, I could have done better with that. But yeah, that's part of cranking it out as a freelancer is that, I just need to get it off my plate. I need to get it out the door. So,
you know, my favorite everyday writer was always Bob Green, the Chicago newspaper man. And he talked about the satisfaction of having submitted his story after researching it endlessly and feeling the whole building shake, knowing the presses are starting up. And then the next morning, picking up that fresh copy of the Chicago newspaper and opening up and seeing his story. How does it feel when the publisher has completed the first round of printing and you get to open your book for the first time?
Yeah. Oh, it's great. It's satisfying. It makes me you know, you get to sort of relive all the parts of it because, you know, for a lot of it, and my wife can vouch for this, I hate it. You know, every book that I write, there's some point where I absolutely hate it. You know, I'm deep in the middle of, you know, I'm stuck in something. I'm trapped. I'm trying to figure something out and something's not working or whatever. And it's making me miserable. Yeah. How could I have ever taken on this stupid assignment to begin with? And then you just keep fighting your way out.
The baby
is
born.
Working through. And then, Once it's finished, you go, "Oh, man, this is nice."
I've got one last question for you. I interview best-selling authors twice a week on the phone. Their publishers set up these interviews, and I always ask them this question. And the first thing they usually say is, "You must be a writer," because only a writer would ask that question. Here's what it is. In the course of writing your books, is there ever a moment when the stories and the people and all these plot lines converge and they start writing themselves and you have to keep up?
Oh, very much so. Yeah, mm-hmm. very much so. That's what I'm finding out with the short stories I've done, and I've already got several that are already finished, but only a couple that I've published. I'm trying to kind of space them out a little bit, but with each one, I start with just a little premise. You know, yeah. I just thought, well, what if a guy was hanging out at the Gadsden Hotel and his drinking buddy was the ghost of Pancho Villa? And I start with that little premise, and then I thought about, well, what if an Elvis impersonator was living in Winslow? Well, what if a whole bunch of them were?
Why
you start
not?
With a premise, and then you just kind of go, and you kind of plod through for a little while, and then at some point, it catches, and I get surprised. I go, man, I wasn't expecting that to happen.
It almost writes itself sometimes, doesn't it?
It takes you in different directions, and that's cool. That's what's the discovery of that writing.
And tell us one final time about your Peregrine Books appearance.
I will be at Peregrine Book Company in Prescott on Saturday, November 16th, this Saturday, just a few days from now, at 2 p.m. And, of course, you can get more information or see where else I'm appearing around the state on my website at RogerNaylor.com.
Our favorite Arizona writer, that is Roger Naylor. Thanks for joining us on Q&A. Sell a bunch of books Saturday, will you?
Thank you, DJ. Appreciate it.
Stay tuned. I got some final thoughts and tomorrow's Q&A guests coming up next on the Talk of the Quad Cities, 1130 a.m., 99.9 FM, 95.5 FM in Prescott Valley and Cottonwood, streaming live, kqna.com. Here, Roger and I were talking about writing, and sure enough, the Literary Southwest series continues at Yavapai College this Friday evening with award-winning Native American poet Lely Long Soldier. That'll be at 7 o'clock at Yavapai College's Library, Building 19, in the Susan Webb Community Room. And a book excerpt reading and discussion will follow. Her books, too, will be available for sale. Stay tuned now for Ben Shapiro at 3, followed by Talk of a Town, Prescott, at 4. Join me back here tomorrow with a very special guest for the whole show, Mike Rothmiller, working on his 27th book. He is a former LAPD police officer and detective. That is Q&A tomorrow at 2, and I'll see you on the radio.